will be introducing him shortly. We have an awful lot to talk about tonight, and we will be making sure we get to everybody's questions tonight, because I know that there's going to be an awful lot of people who want to ask questions to Dr. David Duke. Now, we are watching this live here on YouTube. So if you haven't liked the stream, if you haven't shared it, if you haven't sent it to your friends, please do so. Like and share the stream. But we're also live over on RadioAlbion.com. That is run by my good friend, Sven Longshanks. We stream live there as well. Please support his excellent work. He's a fantastic guy. He's committed to free speech. And there is a wealth of nationalist material over at RadioAlbion.com that you can watch, you can listen to. Please support that excellent site and that excellent guy. Now, if you want to ask questions to Dr. David Duke, the man himself, you can do so through Entropy. Now, the Entropy link is on my Telegram, it's on my Twitter, it's in the show description, and it is in the live chat now. You can support this show financially by sending donations through Entropy, and you can also ask questions. The best questions will be put to the man himself and to the panel as well. And questions get voted up, so it is a meritocracy. The best questions rise to the top, and every week we read out all super chats, all donations, all statements sent as a donation, and we also read out and ask the best questions from the audience, but they have to come through Entropy. We can't monitor all of the live chat, so please, if you want to ask a question, use Entropy. That is very important. If you want to contribute to this show in other ways, the best way to do it is via Bitcoin. Again, the link to the Bitcoin is in the show description. If you want to contact me personally to ask me about anything, ask for help or to donate through other ways or to help Patriotic Alternative, you can contact me personally at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. I reply to all emails unless they are circulars or just a link with no commentary. Those I obviously don't reply to for obvious reasons. Now, the Patriotic Alternative website is up and running. It is fantastic. It is run by the lovely Laura Towler. It is full of articles. There are 2 to 3 articles going up every day. Superb news articles. www.patrioticalternative.org.uk. Sign up there for more news about our growing movement and how to get involved with real life events, conferences, camps, fitness events, dinners, Saturday lunches. We do all sorts of events, obviously not at the moment because of this horrible lockdown, but as soon as it's over, we will be back to organizing. So please support us over at Patriotic Alternative by signing up. We're not asking for your cash, but we do want you to be involved. Now, before we go to the man himself, let us introduce the fantastic No White Guilt, Jason. Who is on tap this week, my friend, and how have you been?
Well, I am fantastic, as is always the case, because I'm serving white well-being with such wonderful people in the midst of such a wonderful community of those going free and serving white well-being. Nothing could be better. Opportunities are presenting themselves to us every single day to continue to grow the cause, to continue to reach out to our brothers and sisters, the Vagues, as we call them out there. I was just on a radio program, a South African radio program yesterday for 2 hours and had a splendid time talking about how we are becoming a global people with many countries rather than many people with many countries. And the future is now. We are making tomorrow happen. Very excited about that. Very excited about having the great Dr. Duke on with us again today, a true celebrity par excellence. And glad to have him. Glad to see so many wonderful names in the live chat already. And we have a magnificent tap coming up this week. I don't know if it's going to be a Friday or Saturday, but we have a guy. He's kind of an unknown guy. His name is, hold on, I know I have his name written here somewhere. It's Mark Collett. He's going to be on with us. So we'll see that guy later this week. And other than that, I'm ready and excited to get started with our conversation here today. Pass it back, brother.
Well, tonight's special guest, if there ever was a special guest who didn't need an introduction, it is this man, but he's getting one anyway. Dr. David Duke is a living legend. Dr. David Duke is probably the world's most famous post-war nationalist, a man known the world over, a man who has shaped this movement, a man who has dedicated his entire life to the pursuit of the betterment of those of European descent, a man who once said things that were very unpopular to say, but has lived to see those things popularized. He is a man that has shifted the global narrative on the issues that he's talked about. Sometimes he's misunderstood, but he's never silenced. He's a man who has had best-selling books that have been read by millions the world over. He is a man that has lectured in universities all over the world. He is a man that is known internationally as he has dueled with the best TV presenters and show hosts the world over and schooled them all. He is a man that we all know and love. He is a man that rose to one of the highest elected offices in his state. He beat all the odds and won through the political system. And I believe he is the only living nationalist today to be the subject of a blockbuster Hollywood film. He truly is a remarkable man, and we truly are lucky to have him here. And I feel lucky and honored to be able to call him a friend because I work with him every Friday on his excellent radio show. So now, without further ado, over to you, my friend. Here is David Duke. Tell us about yourself, where we can find you, what you've been up to, and all of the projects you are working on at the moment.
Hi, Mark. Well, I'm an old man. I guess these days I'll be 70 this year, but I'm really dedicated to our people. The motivation of my life is not hatred of anybody, but it's really motivated by the love of our European people, our traditions, our heritage, the beauty of our people artistically, the great achievements of our people. And I'm also a person that's truly dedicated to human rights. And I think the idea that white people should preserve their heritage and European people should preserve their heritage is not an aspect of race or hatred or anything else. It's an aspect of love. And I think that every people on the earth are naturally like that. There's no people, for instance, who defend their heritage more than Jewish people, but you know, if Europeans do that, or if any other people do that, then that's considered hatred. And by the way, people often say I have a decent persona. If you actually listen to what I say, there may be some people out there who's going to try to say disparaging things about me. And I could spend an hour defending myself from all the attacks on my. I just would like to tell people, just if you want to believe everything they say bad about me, but just listen to the actual things I say, and maybe you can draw some conclusions that are better. But I tell you what, I'll just start off by saying I truly believe in what's called human rights. And I think the most fundamental human right of all is that people have a right to preserve themselves, their heritage, their traditions, that they have independence and freedom to do that. I believe in free speech. I don't think people should be imprisoned for their ideas or their thoughts. I believe that every people on earth have those fundamental rights, and that includes Europeans. And as a European, I believe in a fair policy to people around the world. And I think, in fact, I think there's a lot of people around the world who are not even European, but they're in the same fight against globalism and the same fight against Bolshevism. And whether you call it Bolshevism or capitalism, they're kind of two sides of the same coin. And the Zionist threat to humanity and the wars they present and the banking system. So I think that that my position, I have many allies around the world. I've spoken all over the world, including to major Mexican universities, even African places and Arab places, even though I'm very much against immigration. And I've actually said in those countries, let me tell you something. I just want to tell you very clearly that I'm a person who's a European of Christian heritage, and I want to preserve my heritage in Europe just like you do here in your country. And I just want to make it clear that that's my opinion. And if you believe in that right for yourself, I would hope that you could accept it for me. And most times they've cheered it, because most people around the world really understand when you go around the world that the fundamental idea of a people preserving their unique heritage is just a matter of human rights. And I consider myself a human rights activist and a European activist.
Thank you. That is an excellent, excellent summation. Now, you constantly are misinterpreted and you're constantly referred to with many slurs. You're constantly attacked by the press and the media. And you're also attacked by people who think it's prudent to attack the people the press and the media attack, because these people want to, in their eyes, clear their name of any associations. But you're somebody who's always been a man that stood for peace. You've always been a man that's opposed these genocidal wars in the Middle East. You've always been a man who has stood, as you said earlier, for human rights. Now, recently, when it looked like war was going to break out in Iran, you were a man of courage, you're a man of integrity, and you opposed that war as you've opposed other wars in the Middle East. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I think it's very important for people to understand that we nationalists are the only true anti-war movement.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to note that our enemies in the media, they want to characterize us as mass murderers or hateful, or and in fact, I think some people who get awakened to the crisis that European mankind is facing, they're basically told by the media, if you're going to be a white activist, then you need to go do something violent, because that's how the media presents every white nationalist. Mm-hmm. And that's not really what we're all about at all. And the truth is, the violence has been on the other side. I mean, As you've said, I've campaigned against these wars my whole life. In fact, I believe that all the major wars from the First World War to the Second World War and the wars since have been a disaster for mankind, especially European mankind and all other people on the earth. And I campaigned against those wars. And yet I'm portrayed as this monster, even though, you know, I was in an organization in my younger days, very young, in my early 20s, the KKK, but was a legal organization. It was a nonviolent organization. There was never a single accusation. They had that movie. You mentioned a movie, Hollywood movie, called Black KKK Klansmen. It was written by two Jewish Zionist screenwriters who hate the fact that I exposed the racism of Israel and the human rights crimes of Israel, right? And so they want to discredit me. And they hate the fact that I oppose the ethnic cleansing and what's happened in Palestine, that they have brought us all into these wars, which have harmed everyone. And but in the movie was just a total lie. There was a Klan group in Colorado Springs. There was never a single arrest. There was no bomb. There was no murder plot. This is all admitted historically. But in the movie, there's a plot to kill a sweet little black lady by the terrible, you know, toothless Klansmen and hateful people. And the fact is, none of that happened. It was all made up. It was all a lie, because they can't present us the way it really is. The fact is, the only real plot, in fact, the black policeman who wrote a book called Black KKK Klansmen, and he actually didn't really infiltrate the Klan. That's a whole nother story. But he did infiltrate the communist groups. And the only plot in his own book, which they didn't mention when they interviewed him on national and international TV programs, including Great Britain, the only plot that existed in reality at this time was not a plot by any Klanspeople to hurt or harm a black person. It was actually a plot to kill me by these communists, the Progressive Labor Party. And this is said by the black guy that wrote the book. But nobody, when he did interviews, they didn't bring me on the show to refute any of this. And they didn't ever ask him. They said, well, actually, in the movie, the Klan's going around trying to kill people. But the truth is, there were no arrests of any Klansmen, were there? There weren't any bombs that went off. There was no plot to kill a black woman. But there was a plot, according to your book, to inflict harm on the KKK and David Duke physically to stop him from speaking and exercising his freedom of speech. But there was none of that. So that's a good example of how much the media is so controlled and how they can demonize anyone who they don't like what they say. And again, the whole experience I've had in my life is that there is really true racism in our society, but it's racism and hatred that's being expressed against the European people, and that protects the Zionists of Israel – and those who support it, of the horrific ethnic cleansing that they've done against the Palestinians and the massive crimes they've done. And these wars that have killed British people and European people and Americans for Israel based on lies by the Zionist lobby that's so powerful around the world. And that's why they hate me.
They hate you really for telling the truth, because they fear the truth more than anything. These people can't stand being exposed for what they are. And in many ways, the things that you've been exposing the media for, the things that you've been exposing in America, all over the world, exposing the deep state, exposing the people who run Hollywood, the people who run the press, you very much shaped the discourse in modern America. And in fact, it has been reported that long before Trump said America first, long before Trump was calling for a border wall, you were very, very much predicting the problems that would come to America. And you were talking about border patrols. You were talking about America first. And you were talking about demographic change long, long before it became a mainstream talking point. So in many ways, you've been a bit of a trailblazer, haven't you?
Well, I guess so. I mean, I was the first really American political figure that I actually organized a border watch to report illegal aliens along the Mexican-American border back in the middle 70s. First one to do that, even before the Minutemen later did that. And all the basic programs that Donald Trump ran on and got elected on, I advanced an America First policy, foreign policy, and anti-war policy, much like he did. I advanced the policy of stopping the destruction of our culture and our heritage in this country, protecting our borders. And he recently made a proclamation or a declaration, a executive order to stop the current immigration into America, even legal immigration, because of the fact that we have so much unemployment in America. But there are loopholes in it, unfortunately, that are not doing that. But they do hate Donald Trump with a passion. And most of the media in Great Britain do, most of the media in America do, not because maybe of what he's accomplished, because he's accomplished some things. Other things, he's been very disappointing, obviously, in some of the Middle East policies and so forth. But they don't like anybody out there saying that immigration, if immigration isn't stopped in Europe, Europe will die, will be destroyed. Immigration is not changed in America, we will lose our country. They don't like a guy that goes around saying, you know, we can be able to say Merry Christmas again. They don't like a guy saying we should have trade policies that protect American jobs and workers. And that's what they hate about him. And they tried to impeach him twice. And now they're trying to destroy him. It's called the Trump derangement syndrome. They're trying to destroy him by creating this lockdown and destroying the economies of Europe and really destroying the lives of hundreds of millions of European peoples, their jobs, their livelihoods, being able to pay their mortgages, losing their homes or their flats, that, you know, are creating a disaster in the Western world that's going to cause far more deaths than this virus, which has been totally overblown in an incredibly corrupt manner. The death rate of this virus is not the way they presented it. Everybody was supposed to be dying, but they've been doing this, I believe, to increase their power, to destroy the middle class, not only in America, but in Great Britain and European countries, to make more international globalist corporations and fewer independent businesses, independent restaurants, independent people. They want everybody not to work for themselves and their own small firm. They want everybody to work for international corporation whom they can fire when they want. They want everybody to buy a book rather than the little local bookstore and the thousands that we have. They want everybody to have to go through Amazon. And like Amazon did, they blocked my book, My Awakening and The Secret Behind Communism, and my other books, and where they don't offer it anymore, because they can control the world and they control freedom of speech by controlling the big corporations. And I believe that, you know, I do believe this was a virus that's a dangerous virus like the flu is, but it actually has a death rate that's no greater than the massive worldwide flu epidemic of 2017, 2018. And I've got an article dealing with the CDC, and they say in the article, quote, 80,000 Americans died. In that flu season, 80,000. and the head of the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control in America, wrote. He said that this is the greatest death toll from these flu epidemics, influenza, in the last four decades, in over 40 years. But that didn't cause a shutdown, because the shutdown, the real danger was not the deaths that this virus was going to cause. The danger and the real damage to lives, including, because a lot of lives are cost when you create this poverty, but it's a danger to life and liberty in not only in my country, but in Great Britain and the rest of Europe. Remember what they told you in Great Britain? The London School said that you were going to have, you know, maybe 500,000 people dead in Great Britain. It's not going to be that. It was totally been out of proportion by the media and the government from the very beginning. So this is a good example of how they can control events, and they control the media, and they can corrupt and lie to us about major issues in our lives. And this whole virus scare was meant to create a panic and meant to increase the control of the globalist corporations, to destroy individuals, to destroy efforts of freedom of speech, and for people to endorse this government control over our lives. Hope I wasn't too long there. I'm trying to restrict my long.
We don't have Patrick to keep you under lock and key this time.
You can put me under lock and key, no problem.
Jason, do you have a question, my friend?
Well, I first of all, again, thank you for appearing with us, Dr. Duke. And what I observe when it comes to this virus, I think, is that initially I saw that since the virus was originated in China, a non-white country, what I saw initially was the media, the international organization, the WHO, and the rest saying, oh, no big deal. This is nothing to worry about. Please go to the Chinese festivals. Please hug. You know, in Italy, we saw please hug a Chinese person. Please go to these non-white events. And if you do not go to these non-white events, you're some kind of an anti-white slur. So initially,
I did that in New York City, for instance.
Yes, precisely. New York, Chicago, Chinese New York. Right. Louisiana. We saw some of this as well. And then, of course, we discovered that the disease was quite infectious, and that for certain populations, it's not just, I'll just add, by the way, it's not just people who are elderly or have a condition that would exacerbate the disease, because I have a personal friend who is in her 30s and has no other morbidity, no other sickness, no other anything that would exacerbate
that you know of.
Well, that she or that he or she know, or that I or she knows of, correct? And but it caused. And by the way, I also have friends in three countries around the world working in nursing and doctoring, and they're seeing heart damage for some people who are having. So it's not just the flu. It for some folks it is causing, and it might be a genetic issue, but nonetheless.
But I would like to comment on that and give you maybe a different point of view there. Look, I realize there might be an individual that you know and a few individuals that might suffered from this with no apparent underlying health condition. But we know the statistics about this disease. We know for a fact in Italy, for instance, that the median age of those who died from this virus, the median age was 81 years old. The median age in Europe has been 80 years old. That's the median age. And that 75% of the people who died were over 65. We also know in Italy, for instance, there's been scientific studies of this, that 99% of the people who died in Italy had serious underlying conditions. Now, the media tends to bring it forth people and they'll say, oh, this guy was healthy. Then you look at a picture of him or her. And I'm not saying this is the case with yours, because I'm sure there's some people. But we know the great numbers of deaths. This doesn't. In fact, we can look at the statistics, not just for the coronavirus, but for this epidemic that existed. It also was in Great Britain in 1718, the winter of 1718. 2017 to 2018, to be clear. I'm not talking about the 18th century, but in Europe. And the death of children from four and 17 was almost zero. I mean, it was just unbelievably low. And those people who were younger were affecting this virus. So the numbers were totally inflated. And one of the ways that they did this was they said to everybody, you're going to die. you know, you might die. And so everybody panicked, right? I mean, I was at first, when I first heard this, I was thinking, okay, so how do we stop it? So I was talking about the gloves and I was talking about these other things. But when you started digging into it, the way to stop 99% of the deaths, and there's always been flus, there's always been epidemics. And there was, like I said, just 2 years ago, 80,000 people, the biggest deaths in the last 40 years, right? Mm-hmm. And still, you're probably not going to reach the levels of death worldwide or even in the United States that they had then, 2 years ago. The deaths are going. And by the way, there were no lockdowns then. It spread very fast. And within a few months, the virus had died out because the herd immunity is what really stops these things. We've been dealing with viruses since man first stood upright on the planet. Viruses exist everywhere. And we survived them. And we evolved and we built civilizations. And there's really this whole virus has been used. I'm not saying that the Zionists invented it. I'm not saying that this could have been an escaped virus or something from a Chinese lab. We don't know that. But we've always had viruses. But what I am saying is that in America especially, they're really at war against Trump. That people have this Trump derangement syndrome, and they know that the only way they get rid of Trump is to destroy the economy. And even Dave Maher, you might have heard Dave Maher about Dave, or excuse me, Bill Maher on HBO. He actually, in a show, he said, look, you know, I hope the economy crashes. I know it's going to hurt a lot of people, but that's the only way we can get rid of Trump, right? I mean, we got him on tape. And he said that out loud. And I really do believe a lot of people in media said, well, if we make a panic, it's going to help us destroy Trump because they really want these radical Bolshevik Democrats who want to open the borders wide. They want a guy to go around to Europe from America who's president, right? And say, you guys got to open the borders. It's wonderful. Get the blessings of they don't want someone like Trump saying, I'm glad you're protecting the borders, right? Or you should be protecting the borders. So they don't want a guy like Trump who said there were good people on both sides of Charlottesville. He was the only guy in politics in America that said that. They don't want a guy like Trump who the Jewish Republican Coalition, which is a big fundraisers in the Republican Party, said that the only man that the Jewish people hated more than Donald Trump. This was a Jewish pollster for the Jewish Republican Coalition. The only man that the Jewish people as a group hate more than Donald Trump was when David Duke ran for president. So they're just kind of deranged at this point.
That I agree with that. They are. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Donald, but I know that they are spastic when it comes to going after him and wanting to destroy him. He's going to crush Biden without any problem whatsoever. What I really would like you to talk to is, I know we do have some disagreement about when this started and what was a legitimate concern medically and what was unknown because it was fog of war, perhaps the medical establishment in the United States knew or didn't know, the UK knew or didn't know, but really how anti-whites pivot from, and this is where I think we absolutely agree, how anti-whites pivot from saying, oh, since it came from a non-white country, then nothing to worry about. You should just, you know, eat the disease.
That's all true.
And then when they saw that they could advance their anti-white agenda by shutting down the economy, by keeping it shut down, then they pivoted to, it's the most deadly thing the world has ever seen. And so now we have to stop the shutdown of the economy, ruin everybody's lives. We need to invade your privacy. This is the kind of thing that I know you have seen and studied for many years. And that would be wonderful to hear from you on that point.
I'll do that. And
before
I'll
you say anything on this, 2 seconds, I just want to play something that backs up what David is saying. It's something I tweeted out earlier. It's only a minute long, but I think it'd be good as a discussion point. Just give me 2 seconds and tell me if you can hear this.
All right, man. What do you know, boy? When you take out the mask, Doug, the case fatality rate's at 0.1 to 0.3.
I can't hear it very well, but that's all right. Because volume could go up a little bit.
Everybody here's been vaccinated anyway. USC and LA County Public Health came out with a study. They found that there were 7,000 cases in California.
I'm not hearing it very well, but just tell me what it says.
2,000 people.
Really?
Yeah. So that makes it 0.1 to 0.3. study to get up with? Or?
Yeah. Well,
put your right line with the fruit.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was
a hoax.
I don't know if it was a hoax.
So, yeah.
I couldn't hear a word, Mark, so just tell me the consensus or whatever.
If it's a bit low, then my apologies. This is from the Trump coronavirus press briefing. And if you listen very carefully, you can hear the professionals talking before the briefing, and they all admit that the figures are being inflated and the mortality rate is being vastly, vastly over-exaggerated for potentially for political purposes. And one of them even says, oh, so it's a hoax then. And the other one goes, well, it's not exactly a hoax. You know, we're just exaggerating the figures. And it's very, very interesting because that is actually the behind-the-scenes footage from, and if anyone says they can't hear it or it's in audio,
well, I like to give people
stuff people can go and check it out.
I like to give things people can check out. As you know, everything I write, I always footnote everything. I give them sources and so forth. And I can tell you from the very beginning, science. A lot of the scientists dealing with this were saying something very, very different than the people in the WHO. And in the people in the political realm, right? From the very earliest times, they were making the death toll of the virus, saying this is the most deadly flu ever. It's got a death rate of 3.4% of the people that get the virus, as compared to modern flus, which is 0.2%, you know, less than 0.2%. And they were using very bogus figures because most people get the flu and normal flus, but they don't, you know, they don't go to the hospital. I mean, most people get the flu. They're sick a couple of days. Most people don't even go to the doctor. And but they try to give a notion of the amount of flu. What they were using is people going to the emergency rooms, going to the hospitals to be treated for the virus. And then they were saying, oh, look, it's a 3% or 3.4% death rate. That's totally malarkey, because when you start looking at the in Italy, for instance, they went to towns where you had a high death rate there, and they actually tested every member of like one of the towns in northern Italy. They tested every person in the town. They found out that the disease, all right, had 70 times more people infected than they were saying in comparison with the death rate. 70 times. Which made the virus back to the normal flu rate. There is a Dr. Ioannidis, Stanford University professor. He's done three big studies on this, and he found the same thing in America. You know, he said, in fact, that the flu, the people who had this flu, this coronavirus, COVID-19, SARS-2, that's the scientific name for it, that they were 52 to 75 times underrepresented. So, and when you do that, he says it's exactly in line with the death toll for the normal flus we've been having over the last, you know, 75 years in England, France, Germany, America, and the rest. So this was totally inflated. And we've had that corrected now because we also checked Iceland's tested 10% of their people. Again, the number of people that got the flu and the death toll is in line with normal flus. That's a fact. And they've done this in many, many countries. And by the way, Sweden has had no lockdown. And their death toll, by the way, they're very similar to Switzerland in terms of demographics and cities and so forth. They're not like Norway. And they actually had less deaths than Switzerland had. That's the closest one, I guess you could probably compare Sweden to. And they've had totally no lockdowns, where Switzerland had a very serious lockdown. In so many ways, this is an epidemic. It's one of the worst style flu epidemics, for sure. But it is definitely not in the standpoint of this apocalypse that the media has presented. But they found a way to profit from this. Goldman Sachs has made probably a $500 billion from this. And 90%, by the way, even in Britain, 90% of the people who own stocks in Great Britain, and that's part of many policemen's retirement funds, teachers' retirement funds, people that work for corporations in Great Britain, 90% of the people in the stock market that lost money are just the average investors with retirement funds, whatever, pension funds and all the rest, right? The people, 90%, the people who made money on it are the big banks. And they're the ones bailed out by the government. They made money off of this crisis the same way in 2007 and 2008, which Britain also suffered from and Europe suffered from as well, the meltdown. The big banks, the big predator banks like Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan, run by David Solomon, which is Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan, which is run by Jamie Dimon, all right? They made money off of this. And besides that, this has been advantageous to the global international corporations, which we know are taking away our liberties and they're able to control people a lot better than having people independent with their own business. So they found a way to make an advantage out of this. And I think it's pretty obvious when you start looking into it. I'm not talking about a grand conspiracy. I'm just talking about, and also, by the way, part of it is this. The media sells newspapers. They get people to watch their shows if you have a big crisis, right? And even the authorities, if the health authorities of Great Britain say, this is a crisis, this is going to be the end of civilization. If we don't stop this, everybody's going to die and millions of people are going to die across Europe and 500 million people in the world or 50 million people. That makes them more important. They're going to save you. Fauci is a perfect example of that in America. So it's... So this also, it makes sense for people who are in that business and in media. You know, if they got everybody locked down, the ratings are going to be bigger for their social media, isn't it, that they control. The ratings are going to be bigger for their television outlets, right? And the more that they make this thing into a big crisis, the more power that they're going to have over us. And also the more they can teach people and train people to believe the government and sell out our personal rights for these powerful forces who are going to protect us, in quotes.
Right. I've got to give a bit of announcement. As this stream has gone live, people are actually flagging this stream, and the stream has been put into limited state. This is the first time I've ever seen a stream in limited state. We are obviously under attack here. And interesting, I should imagine, that the people who are attacking us are these so-called free speech warriors of the English and, what insert word, Defence League and the TR movement, the people who can't stand the truth. You know, we all know what that word is. We all know what they inserted when they changed their name. Yeah. But you can still chat live with us using the Entropy link. The Entropy link is on my Twitter and it is on my Telegram. If you go into the Entropy chat, you can chat freely and that cannot be stopped. I've never seen this level of suppression. Now, not one.
And what have we said so terrible? You know,
one has been used, not one endorsement of violence. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about, David, and this is really important, and this really nicely segues from what you're just saying. We're having a very polite discussion about problems affecting the world, and there hasn't been any allusion to violence or to racial slurs or anything like that. This is all genuinely productive chat. But there is a lot of people today who are a bit black-pilled, and there's a lot of people saying, oh, we can't win now. Now, you still engage in electoral activity. You still think, obviously, that is something worth engaging in. Yep. What do you say to these doom mongers? What do you say to people, after spending 40 years in the movement, what do you say to the people who are saying we've already lost? How do you keep your morale high? Because you are like you're the Duracell bunny of nationalism, aren't you? You never stop.
Duracell bunny keeps on going, right? But I say this. First off, there's two things people have to understand in this movement, right? You not only have to have an idea, you have to have an idea that is moral, and people understand what a moral idea. You know, the average European person, even the average activist, if they're walking down the street and some black kid or something was in the street, little child, right, and a truck was coming along, they try to save it. they say save that kid, because that's the way our moral reality is. People want to preserve their own rights, their own heritage, their own values, even those that are strong. But at the same time, they don't want to unnecessarily harm anyone. They simply want our rights to preserve ourselves, just like we agree with the idea that people in those other lands have a right to preserve their culture in their own lands. And if you don't speak in a way that's moral for our people, you're never going to attract our people, because our people are not willing, and they shouldn't be. They don't want to go out and kill people en masse. They don't want to murder people. They certainly will defend themselves if they're attacked, or if they're invaded or whatever. They've got a right to defend themselves and their homes and their families and all those things. But if that's the reason why the Zion media, the Hollywood media, and the big international broadcast media portrays us as murderers and killers and terrorists and hateful people. The truth is, one reason I can go on like I have, and the Duracell bunny, I guess. I don't know if I like to call myself a bunny. I don't think I'm really a bunny. I'm not all that cuddly, I don't think. But the reason I can do this, I'll tell you why. This sounds funny for the person that they would say is spouting hate. It's because I really do have a motivation in my life of love. I really love my people. I respect all peoples in the world, even though, you know, I don't want to be like them. I don't want to be of Muslim faith, but if they want that religion in their own country, they got the right to choose that in their own nation. They have every right. As long as they're not hurting us with it, as long as they're not trying to invade us. And that's, but you notice how the media does. They're like, they'll look to the Crusades and they'll say, oh, look at the Crusades. Europeans tried to invade the Middle East. But they will never talk about the fact that the first Crusades, that the first invasions were Middle Eastern invasions of Europe. They invaded, you know, they took over Turkey. Then they took over, they invaded the Balkans all the way up to the walls of Vienna. The Moors and other Muslims invaded Spain and put people under a terrible tyranny and slavery. In fact, all during from the earliest centuries of Islam, they were running corsairs, and there were ships all along the borders of the entire European continent grabbing slaves, sometimes taking the entire towns and taking it to the slave depots of Morocco and the Middle East. So the Crusades were more of a reaction, and the Crusades started by freeing Spain from Muslim occupation, freeing Sicily, freeing Malta, freeing the Balkans, right? And freeing what was called the Holy Land, because Europeans were Christians. So the hypocrisy of this is just legend. But when you're, and I do believe that people can be consumed by hatred, that's a destructive thing. But when people are consumed by an idea based on love and beauty and freedom, you know, and human rights and true rights of human beings to have speech and beautiful art and literature. If this is your motivation, that gives you a lot more energy, a lot more fuel, like that Energizer bunny, for the long fight. And that's what I think is one of the things that's kept me going, because I know what we're doing is right. I have a moral certitude about that. And I've always stood up on the right things, and they have to portray. If you want to win for your cause, if you project yourself like the Hollywood media portrays our people, you're doing exactly what they want. If you go out and commit a violent act and shoot down or kill innocent men, women, and children, or, you know, of any type that's not European, then you're just doing exactly what they like. They'll make a celebration when a white person goes out and does some sort of violent act. Now, if we get to the point of invasion and war and the fight for our freedom, yeah, there may be some violence there. It's always been true that tyranny, that people, and the media itself, every movie says that people have a right to overthrow tyranny, and we have a right to do that. But at the same time, it still has to have a moral base. The reason we want that is because we love our people. We love our heritage. We want to preserve it. And we want the human rights that are entailed by European countries. And of the world, European nations are probably the nations of the world who are most devoted to basic European and human rights of free speech and thought and principle and, you know, and caring about the poor, caring about making sure people get good health care, caring about a good future for our children and making sacrifices for that. I don't think there's any people on earth that have been more concerned about human rights than Europeans. I'm not saying that other people haven't been, but if you want to get a movement that saves our people, you have to make sure that people understand that we are on the moral side, that we are human rights activists. And our fight is not about trying to conquer the world or oppress other people. Our fight, my God, our people are being ethnically cleansed in our own countries. And we're victims of mass violence. If we portray ourselves that we want to have violence or we could have violence to do it, that's exactly the opposite of the reality that we face, right? It's not Europeans who are massively attacking minorities in America or in Europe, right? It's not, it's the other way around. The real victims of crime, the victims of terrorism, the victims are massively Europeans. And they're also taking away our basic human rights in so many levels. And what they want to do to us, you know, is not what we want to do. We simply want to preserve ourselves and our families and our heritage and the beautiful aspects of our civilization. And every people have that right, including people of European descent in the world.
Sorry. I agree. That is wonderfully said. And it's good to know that even after all this time, you're still so upbeat, still fighting, and you're still committed to victory for our people, which is something we always do. We must never bow our heads. Only he is lost who gives himself up lost. And just another reminder to everyone watching, please share the Entropy link. This stream is being censored. We know the people who are censoring it. We know how spiteful these people are. We know how hate-filled these people are. There's no hate here tonight. We are just spreading a message of well-being for our people, just as all people of the world should be entitled to and everyone else is indeed allowed to on this platform.
Let's take a look at that flagging a second before we go on, right? Let's take a look at the fact it's been flagged. Let's take a look at they're restricting the video. So what have we said? Well, I said we should have respect for all other peoples. We're not trying to hurt any other people. We simply want to preserve ourselves and our own rights. And also, by the way, what I've really been expressing here is that this crazy apocalyptic, this crazy radicalization, this hysteria about this virus and shutting down society, costing tens of millions, hundreds of millions of Europeans all over the world to lose their jobs, right? To lose their businesses that they've worked their whole life to establish, right? Run them out of business so the big companies could come in and buy them up and make a, you know, international restaurant chain, right? Or absorb them, right? So also, I'm telling you, if they were really concerned about life, once we knew that the vast majority of the deaths were older people, and people with underlying conditions. And that's a fact. There's no argument that there are certainly some outliers like your friends, Jason, that you were talking about. But that's a fact. So why didn't our governments move to isolate and protect those vulnerable people? You see, they didn't need, you don't really need to protect school kids. They're not going to die in great numbers. In fact, the truth is herd immunity is what protects the virus that was flourished and killed 80,000 people in America in 2017 and 18, right? It started in November, December, actually, when it got going. It killed a lot of people in a short period of time, but then it died out. It died out because the way viruses have always died out historically is through what's called herd immunity. And when you do this lockdown, what you do is you stop getting herd immunity quicker. And you end up threatening and endangering those people who have these other conditions. What we should have done, the moral thing to do, this is a good reason to restrict this video, right? I'm telling you, as countries begin to release this lockdown, what we've got to do is let people go back to work, let people go back to a game, let people go back to meetings and church or whatever they want to do, but make sure that we protect those people who are more liable to die from this. In fact, they were massively more liable to die from this. And we should make sure they're protected. We should make sure any nursing home, any veterans home, any old age home, assisted living home, that those people that, you know, the people who work there are not infected, that they don't visit for a while. And with herd immunity, in a matter of two or three short weeks, believe it or not, per city, the herd immunity is established. And then the older people can once again hug their granddaughters and hug their children and right and be released back in society too, because the virus is extinct. The 2017 virus, 2018, it died out. There was no vaccine necessary. And by the way, there was no vaccine available. And Dr. Redmond, head of the CDC, said there was no vaccine. That's one reason why the death toll was so much bigger, right? But the virus died out because of herd immunity. So this is the way mankind has always treated this issue, and we could have saved lives. So here I am, and here you are listening to me. We're talking about saving lives. We're talking about how the fact that shutting down everybody causes more suicides. Every 1 million unemployed, every 1% of increased unemployment costs, listen to this, 1% more suicides. You have hundreds of thousands of suicides in European countries, millions worldwide. So how many suicides are you creating? How many violence and domestic violence and child abuse in these cramped conditions? And also when kids are not going to school, right? But they're still outside. They still play, all right? And they still meet their kids, and they roughhouse, they wrestle, they do things. And they're locked in with their grandparents in many cases. A lot more chance for the grandparents to get the virus, right? Let them go to school. But make sure that the grandparents and the older people and the people with conditions, that they're protected. Those are the ones who need social, separation, social distancing. Make sense? I think it does. You know, that's how we stop this problem.
It certainly does make sense. Now, we do have an awful lot of super chats and questions. So
let's go on today. 2 hours or 1 hour? What are we?
Yeah, 2 hours. Well, as long as the stream keeps going, we're here for the full.
Well, you know me. As long as you know, they got a question, I'll just keep going.
I know. Well, let's do some of these super chats and questions, because right, you can still watch the stream. If you're watching the stream, go over to my Twitter. You can share it on Enterpre. You can watch it on Radio Albion. You can still share the link. And if you're signed into YouTube, you can still watch it. The only time you can't sign, I don't think it's available in Germany anymore. So any of the German viewers, my apologies, but you can still watch on Enterpre. But there is a lot of
super chats. By the way, if anybody has any, like, very, you know, all the things that have been said about me, the hateful things by the media, the lies, I could be here 3 hours defending every accusation that the Zion media has ever made about me. So I just suggest people out there who are listening and watching this program to just believe everything they say about me. It's fine. All right. But just listen to what I'm saying and judge what I'm saying by what I'm saying. And if what I'm saying in this 2 hours is not so hateful, not so terrible, and pretty reasonable, then maybe some of the other things that they say about me are lies too. I'm not going to spend my time dealing with abusive people, but I'm willing to answer any question about what our positions are and why our positions are the way they are. How's that sound?
That is perfect. Let's do some questions. Junta Mominari gave $3 and he said, Poland's parliament recently voted against stopping S-447, effectively turning Poland into another Palestine. 30% of Warsaw property can be claimed. Right. That was more of a statement. Lycomedes gave $5 and says, Dr. Duke, what do you think of the lexicon of going free and white well-being?
Going free? And white, well, what do you mean going free? What does he mean by that?
This is this person is asking about what I teach about going free. I have a book, Going Free, and essentially it's this kind of things you've heard me talk about.
That book, I'm looking forward to reading. I'm sure it's a great book if you wrote it, for sure.
So, well, thank you, brother. Thank you very much.
But I think, you know, so do something for me, Jason. I know you're interviewing me, asking questions, but just give me a quick synopsis of the principle of going free. and I can tell you what I think about it right now. The quick synopsis.
All right.
It's a fundamental principle of going free. If you express it, you
that say, that we have been infected with anti-white ideas and thoughts that corrupt our view of the world, and going free is cleansing ourselves of those anti-white views and thoughts so that we can think for our well-being and the future of our people.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously I'm extremely for that. And I also believe that everything that we believe is totally reasonable. I think it's scientifically valid. Race is real. It's not a social concept or a construct. And I also believe that morally, there's every reason to be in favor of Europeans preserving their own heritage, the same way the left would be the first ones to defend people in South America or Central America or Africa in terms of their rights if they were being changed, or if there was massive immigration in some black country, boy, they would be the first ones to say, this is horrible. White people are condemned for going to the Americas, even in old times, which at a time when every race, every culture, every tribe expanded when they could, right? But white people are singled out for that. So to judge us by that today and to say white people are evil because white people went around the world and created these civilizations and cultures and nations, then by that standard, all right, is it not right for us to be able to preserve our heritage? And the truth is every race has expanded. The Asians invaded Europe. The Middle Easterners invaded Europe, right? In Spain, in Italy. So, and this is true about all Indian tribes. The Aztecs wiped out 20 different tribes, right? But the Mexican people revere their Aztec heritage and say the Aztec civilization was a great civilization and great people, even though they wiped out all these different Indian tribes, which is equivalent to races, by the way. So the hypocrisy is obvious, and the idea that we just approach things and we try to step back and try to look at this with intelligence and fairness, I think our positions are unassailable. I think they're undeniable.
I agree. And we will move on to the next question. Junta Mominari gave $5 and said, Zio agents in the US and the West sell state and corporate secrets to China. Do you think they will be successful infecting the body politic of China and use them as a new host, discarding the US empire as they did with the Ottoman and British ones?
Well, they always play this double game. There's no question that the Jewish establishment massively opposed Trump. Goldman Sachs made a rule to their employees that if they gave Donald Trump a dime, they supported Donald Trump, they'd be fired. Their career would be destroyed. These were good jobs, right? And they were definitely determined to destroy Trump. He kind of snuck up on them. They didn't believe he was going to win. They believed in their own garbage. And so there's no question in my mind at all that they these Zios play both ends of the coin. Now, once Trump won, and there were a few at the end, Sheldon Adelson was the only real major Jewish contributor that gave Trump any money. 18 of the 20 largest contributors to Hillary Clinton were Zionist Jews. And so, you know, I hate to say it, but there were Zionists who supported the state of Israel and radical Jews. Not all Jews are Zionists, but 18 of the 20 were, right? That's the biggest contributors to Hillary Clinton. We're talking about millions upon millions of dollars, 18 to 20 in a country where Jewish Zionists are less than 2% of the population, right? So, but at the same time, once Trump got elected, what did they do? They tried to co-opt him, right? So they made sure that this wasn't planned before, apparently, but Jared Kushner moved in the White House. I mean, it's crazy. And they came in, even the neocons opposed Donald Trump, but they were never Trumpers. But as soon as he won, a good example is Paul Singer, who started the whole Steele dossier thing. He actually came in and gave $1 million to the Trump inauguration efforts. And Goldman Sachs, by the way, acted like, well, they could accept Trump. And so Trump put Gary Cohn of Goldman Sachs, the same corporation that said, if you supported Trump, you know, we'll fire you. they put the head of Goldman Sachs, the president, into control of the economy. They put Mnuchin, a former vice president of Goldman Sachs, into the treasury positions, which they've been doing for years. So they work both sides. Another good example of that is, you're right, there's no question that Israel sold many of our secrets, our military and other secrets, to the Chinese, right? At the same time, I think we see the Jewish power structure, the Zionist power structure, global power structure, they're a little bit afraid of the Chinese. So the question is, can they really infiltrate the Chinese, where there are some Jews that claim Chinese descent? But probably not. But they can try to make a deal with the Chinese. They can say, look, if you do this about Israel, then we'll do this for you, right? And they do that. And they do the same thing to Russia. The Zion media around the world, including your country and France and Germany and all over the world, hates Russia. They support sanctions against Russia. They say Putin's the worst guy that ever lived, right? And at the same time, some of our people think, oh, no, Putin's under the total control of them. But if Putin and Russia was under control of them, why in the world would they sanction them? Why in the world would they viciously portray Putin in the horrible way that they do? Yeah, Putin may play a game. He may go to Chabad Lubavitch and say nice things about them, and they say nice things, but they're always trying to control. And Israel does certain trade with Russia. But at the same time, the global Zionists, because that's important to Israel itself as a country, but the global Zionists do sanctions against Russia for every European country, including Britain, including America. All over the world, they work for this. So that's the answer to that question. I think they can't. I think they're actually worried about the Chinese. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm much less concerned about Chinese influencing us than the Zionists who control our media, our Hollywood, who are trying to teach us to hate ourselves, and the hypocrisy of supporting the state of Israel, which has high walls and laws against intermarriage and all these other processes, right? A country formed by ethnically cleansing 600,000 Palestinians, right? And yet this blinders are on our people because of their control of the media. So that's hopefully answering the question there.
Thank you. That was a brilliant answer. We've got another super chat here from JC Starling. $5. Hail Mark, hail Jason, hail Dr. David Duke and everyone in the chat. Dr. Duke, I think the virus and the lockdowns are actually opening up white normies' eyes to the evils of our anti-white globalist enemies. Do you see any upsides to this virus? This is for you, David.
Well, I think there is an upside. I think that this virus is going to explode now because more and more scientists are coming out and explaining that the death toll wasn't, they said it was 3.4. We know now it isn't. There's been, like I say, dozens and dozens of scientific studies by different scientists in different countries. It's not been, there's no motive behind this other than finding the scientific truth. And most scientists, I believe, are motivated by simply learning what the truth is. So this can blow up in their face because the decisions made by the global Zio elite of the world, the deep state, if you would, globalism, have damaged untold hundreds of millions of people. And this is so important to understand here because, and this is, you know, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. When you're in the middle of the forest, you don't know how big the forest is. This disaster, this is a major disaster for every European country, especially because those are the most advanced economic countries in the world, political countries in the world, scientific countries in the world. This is the biggest single disaster for our people in our lifetime. You realize that in terms of our economy. This is unbelievable what this is doing. This is putting out of work hundreds of millions of people. It's also eliminating the last barrier between the Zio control, in a sense, in terms of the middle class people, the small businessman, the independent people of the world, because this is favoring global corporations, right? So when a small restaurant fails, but it was good, but it fails artificially because the government made you shut down, right, and not take any guests, and you're barely able to pay your money and pay your employees, if that's why a restaurant closes down, when the thing is over, the big corporations with the big money from the banks that they can get, they're going to come in and take it over. And the guy that maybe ran the restaurant, he's now going to be an employee. He's going to be a wage slave, right? Working for the corporation. But he's going to be an employee who can be fired if they have the wrong political positions. Now, the good side of this, if there is one, the good side of this is that this is easy to expose. Not with crazy conspiracy theories. I don't care whether this disease came from bats or came from a laboratory. We've always had diseases. Rabies existed long before genetic cloning or CRISPR or anything like that. We've had massive epidemics long before we could even make them in the laboratory. Mankind's always dealt with it. The point is that this disease epidemic, once they realized this was a disease epidemic, it was a novel virus, and it could cause death. This was an opportunity by the media to grab it to gain their particular objectives. And that's what people are going to be mad about. I believe when people learn that all this shutdown, this massive economic relocation, this massive loss of homes and flats by millions of British people and Germans and French and Americans and Canadians and Australians and elsewhere around the world, because it's going to be reflective of the whole world, including non-white world, they're going to be really angry. They're going to be really pissed. And we have a chance to expose that. And I think that's a great opportunity for us.
I agree. Thank you very much. The next super chat is from Junta Mominari, $3. Everyone should read Horetz's article called Super Rich Asian Jays, Singapore's Least Known Elite. Modern day Singapore, Macau and Hong Kong were created by the tribe. Probert Hildebrand gave $15. Thank you very much. David Duke was one of the biggest influences in my awakening for white well-being and in fully understanding the JQ. For that, I'm forever grateful. Never surrender, never apologize. God bless. Thank you very much. Corey1995 gave £100 and just gave a thumbs up. Wow. Thank you very much. Very generous donation. Thank you. Blunderbuss gave $25 and said, if Joe Biden wins the US presidency, will it be blut unbidden instead of Hail Trump? Nazbol Gang gave $20. Thank you very much. And he asked a question to David. Were you friends with Wolfgang Droge from Heritage Front in Canada?
Yeah, I knew Wolfgang pretty well years and years ago. He got in some trouble. A lot of people in the movement, they're struggling. He had a lot of barriers to overcome. And I was sad to hear of his death. And he was actually murdered in Toronto. And it was sad news to me. I knew Wolfgang, and I liked the guy a lot. I thought he was a very decent person.
Sorry, I had the wrong window there. We will move on to the next super chat. Thank you very much. Full Natty Bro gave $10. Very, very grateful. Thank you very much. He said, do you believe that the end goal of globalism and multiculturalism is the subjugation of the human race?
Yeah, I believe that this is the ironic thing. And this is the thing you're not supposed to say. I'll try to be careful. We don't want to go from flagged and restricted to just ripped off the air in about 10 seconds or so. But, the ironic thing is that the same media that says racism is evil and hatred is evil are the biggest manufacturers of hate the world's ever seen. And it's hate the Germans. It's hate the European peoples. It's hate Christians. They produce this hate. They advocate murder. They advocate repression of freedom of speech. They want to put people in prison for years, kidnapping from their family like they do in Germany if they have, revisionist thoughts or they have questions about certain issues of history. Put them in prison for years, kidnap them from their families. These people have a lot of hatred. And the ironic thing is that this media is run by people who support the state of Israel, which by any measure you want to use is probably the most racist nation on earth. Think of it this way. All right. Any European nation that would make a law that it would be illegal to marry a Jew, right? They would say that was the most hateful, racist, oppressive country. In fact, I believe they would sanction that country. They would boycott that country. They'd probably go to war against that country that had those kind of laws, right? And yet Israel is a nation that has laws that forbid the marriage of a Jew to a non-Jew, to a Gentile, to a Goy. That's a fact. Israel's massive segregation of schools for Jews and Gentiles. Israel and the Jewish global elite all over the world wants gun control, take away the rights of people to defend themselves. Yet in Israel, you can carry submachine guns in the street. The Jewish elite of Hollywood and the banking institutions and the global media is all for gay marriage. And they hate Russia for the fact that they don't allow that, right? Well, at the same time, guess who doesn't allow gay marriage? Israel. Fact, right? They don't allow gay marriage in Israel. You know, we can go to the abortion issue. Israel, you know, has very strict abortion laws. They're not considered the most free of the abortion countries, but they support abortion for the goyim around the world. In terms of walls and borders, Israel's immigration policy is based on genetics. Now, it's not about the Jews as a religion, because they don't care if a Jewish person is an atheist, right? A communist, a religious Jew, a Chabad. They don't care. They don't care. What they care about is whether or not you're Jewish genetically by genealogy. Now, if European countries were going to say, we only want this one genetic, one people of one genealogy, right? That what would happen to that country? So if there's not an hypocrisy here, and this is why people are understanding this question, it's not anti-Semitism to point out Jewish racism. And it's not saying that all Jews are racist. I'm not condemning all Jews. I'm not condemning every Jewish organization. There are Jews that oppose Jewish racism. There are Jews like Gilad Atzmon, one of your British friends, which I think are a friend to us, who fights against Zionism and these trade wars in Great Britain. And he's a very honorable man. He's also against the shutdown of freedom of speech. He recognizes the fact that even aspects of history should be able to be debated. So we don't consider ourselves an enemy of every Jew on the planet or every Jewish person. But we do point out that these major, powerful Jewish organizations, well-funded, are supporting a racist supremacist state in Israel, while at the same time, these same groups try to stop any European from protecting our European ancestry and our borders and our culture and our values in our own countries. That is gold-plated hypocrisy.
It certainly is. Thank you for that excellent question. Joe R. gave £10 and he said, with respect, I think Jason is missing a lot of important info about the virus. I agree with Dr. Duke. It's more conspiratorial than Jason seems to want to accept. I find that people who stream a lot like Jason don't get the chance to research it as deeply. Thank you for that. Blunderbuss gave $10 and said, ask Dr. Duke if that genealogist who is tracing his lineage, if she is publishing a book on her research. Thank you for the super chat.
Say that again.
Is the genealogist who is tracing your lineage publishing a book on it?
She's written a lot of a book. I guess she's going to publish it at some point. You know, that's up to her. But it is an interesting book. And I was really amazed to find out a lot of my ancestry. I mean, I have direct ancestry to Charles Martel, you know, who, of course, was very decisive in the battle to stop the Muslim invasion of Europe. It's kind of interesting. And I learned a lot. I knew a lot about her before, but my great aunt was a woman named Carolyn Hedger, who was a true human rights activist, but she was also a member of the American Eugenics Society. She was a member of the Society for Restrictionist Immigration in America. And she was also a natural food advocate. Right. And so that was my great aunt. I mean, it's real interesting when you go back, and I do have a lot. And by the way, I have 14, and of course, as you go back further, you have more lines, but I have 14 direct ancestors, great, 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 pretty far back, direct grandfathers or direct ancestors who were sureties of the Magna Carta. Pretty amazing. I mean, I might be more British than most British people.
Thank you for that. Daniel Lewis gave £50. Thank you very much. Very generous donation. He said 14 for all. Lee Peter gave $3 and said, Mark, certain features have been disabled for this video. YouTube is telling me. Thank you very much for the donation. Yes, YouTube is censoring this video, but they have emailed me saying we haven't broken the terms of YouTube, but they do think that it might be a bit fruity for some. So they have told me that the video will remain on YouTube, but just in a limited state, because they're acknowledging we haven't actually broken the rules. So keep watching. I think this is a powerful stream and I'm enjoying myself. JP gave $20. Thank you very much. He said, love the show. Keep doing God's work. The Thin Red Line gave $5. Thank you very much. The chat has disappeared. Dr. Duke, did you ever hear Mr. Rockwell speak live?
No, I didn't, but I talked to him on the phone a few times. I used to correspond with him as a very young man, at 14, 15 years old, and I had a lot of respect for him, and I thought he was one of my heroes. He was a good guy, you know, and, you know, I think his approach, you know, in retrospect was wrong, and I think it was you know, it was an interesting approach. You know, you just kind of challenge the enemy, and I did some of that myself. I mean, it was kind of like theater, like original trolls when I trolled and picketed William Kunstler, that communist of the Chicago Seven. And but I, you know, over the years I've learned that we not only have to be very pure in our ideology, you know, we have to be honest about all of the aspects that we believe, race and all the different aspects. But at the same time, you've got to learn psychology. I mean, psychology and being the Greeks knew this. I mean, the Greeks were great philosophers and great ideas, but they also understood the art of rhetoric. They understood, you know, how to sell an idea, how to bring an idea, how to open people's minds. And that takes understanding psychology. I tell that to my younger friends in the movement all the time. And I've been doing this really heavy the last 10 years of my life. But I believe that for every three books you read about the scientific evidence about race or the Jewish question or Zionism or any of these other subjects, immigration, you should read one book on psychology. You should understand how human psychology works, so you can begin to open the minds of those people who have been in many ways brainwashed, or they've been tilted to different points of view. And part of that is understanding that the way that they take our people from our own bosom, from our own values, the way they do that is by associative conditioning. They just, and the media constantly gives you these images of, you know, if you're a multicultural individual advocate, then you're successful, you're happy, you've got nice trinkets and nice cars and a beautiful girl on your side and all the rest of it, right? And this is how they work. We have to understand that. And I don't think any of the great what they call quote unquote fascist leaders or nationalist leaders of Europe, they really understood psychology. In Germany or Austria or Spain under Franco or Italy, they understood that a nationalist movement uses symbols that are part of their own country, that they go to the heart of their people. And we have to understand that we should make sure that we don't put any barriers up between us teaching our people about the ideas. We say the same message, but we don't put artificial barriers that keep people from opening their minds and their hearts to our position. The ideas are what's going to sell our movement and bring our movement power and fuel our movement to victory, not the trappings. You make trappings politically that fit the times and fit the mentality of the people of your nation. That's my
answer. Excellent answer. Thank you very much. Serena JB, this is more of a question for me. It's £3. Thank you very much. She said, today, Derbyshire Police put out a tweet celebrating the life and legacy of Stephen Lawrence. We all know they wouldn't do the same for Chris Donald or other numerous white victims of diversity. Yes, anyone who wants to look up the most brutal and disgusting racist murder in British history, it is not the murder of Stephen Lawrence, but the murder of Chris Donald. And the media and the government attempted to cover up that murder and stop the public hearing about it. Right. Please educate yourself on that. Thank you for the super chat. Nita gave $5. Can Dr. Duke comment on the immigration halt by President Trump? Also, can he comment on the Groyper Wars and the Michelle Malkins entering our sphere to talk about our issues?
And that's another point, too. And let me tell you something. We've talked a lot about the coronavirus today. We've talked a lot about how some people in the movement, I believe they're mistaken in what they think about this. I mean, I'm really shocked to see people on our side basically adopting hook, line, and sinker, the whole method and the whole propaganda of the left. I don't fault people for doing that. And we're always going to have different opinions. As long as people are standing up for our heritage, they're my brother, our sister in this cause, period, right? But I think we got to be aware that the same media uses lots of things to conquer us. And I also believe that there's a lot of things we can be very happy about. See, I do believe, even though I have a lot of disagreements with Putin, I've got great friends. I was in Russia 5 years. I knew most of the real leaders of the movement in Russia. And a lot of the people over there, they really don't like Putin, and then some really do. But I do know, and I really believe, that Putin is a thorn in their sides. Otherwise, they wouldn't demonize him every day in the British media and the American media and sanction Russia, right? They hate Putin, and they hate Trump. And I'm not saying that Trump's one of our people, but why do they hate Trump? It's obviously not because he's really supporting our movement. In fact, he's really not in some ways, but he's giving lip service to the movement. And my God, I want you to think about what would have happened if Hillary Clinton would have come into office. She'd have opened our borders wide. At least Trump is talking about immigration, right? And that's one reason why they want to destroy him. And if the Democrats come in this time, these people are full Bolsheviks. No argument about it. They're full Bolsheviks, but they're same time capitalists, right? They're capitalist Bolsheviks. But remember, capitalism and Bolshevism has always been supported by the same tribe. Capitalism and communism. Communism got its money from Jacob Schiff, big banker, New York, right? Banker, Jacob Schiff. He was the Goldman Sachs of his time. Okay? That's who was the biggest contributor to the Russian Revolution. So the truth is that we have got to understand and be very clear about this, that there are good things as well as bad things going on in the world. And we have to understand that they do want to destroy Trump, because if they destroy Trump, they can open the floodgates. I believe the first thing would happen if somebody like Biden came in. And by the way, Biden is a perfect counterpart to what happened in terms of the Zio takeover, the so-called oligarch takeover of Russia. And I was there during this time, part of the time, and I knew what was going on then. I mean, 50% of the resources of Russia were taken over by 12 Zionist oligarchs who were loyal to Israel, by the way, and the richest resource nation on earth, right? And that took place under a person which is the perfect Russian counterpart to the demented Biden, right? Of course, Yeltsin was a lush. He was an alcoholic, right? And they could completely control him. Chubais was around him, right? Abramovich. We can just keep going on that score. You know, it was just amazing to see the Zionist control over that government. And I think that's exactly what happened under Biden. They would criminalize any sort of white people that believe in our rights and heritage, as well as other people's, that protect those. I think that they would destroy us economically. They would forbid us from having even a cell phone. They would find ways even to forbid us to have an email. I mean, this is what's coming, I believe. So I think we have to sometimes make strategic votes and understand that if they so much want to destroy Trump, there's a reason for it, right? And that's because whatever all his faults are, and there are plenty, and things that he does that are disgusting, I know what the alternative is. And one thing I learned in Russia, I worked with Alexander Solzhenitsyn, you know, he was actually a friend of mine, right? I learned a lot from this great Soviet dissident. And I learned a lot from older people in the 1990s when I first went to Russia, early 90s. I talked to people still alive from the Russian Revolution. And the one thing that every one of them told us, he's, and I asked him about that. Well, you know, what was your position when the Bolsheviks were coming into power? Why didn't you do more, right? And they said, we didn't realize what they really had up their sleeve, what they really were intending to do. And anybody who tells us we've got to accelerate things and put these Bolsheviks in power with all the power of the United States Army and modern technology and modern surveillance and modern psycho warfare, anybody that tells us to put this in power because that's going to bring on the revolution and save us doesn't, should go back and talk to these Russians. They said, because they all say to me that we should have done anything to prevent their final takeover. And we didn't understand that. And that was the biggest mistake. That was the biggest regret that Solzhenitsyn told me. If we would have known what these Bolsheviks were actually going to do with the mass murders of tens of millions of people, we would have fought harder along the line and not thought that maybe we could get it back later after the communists proved their badness. No, that didn't happen. It did actually come back, but that was because of the mistakes they made. And by the way, the fact that the Russians overthrew the Bolsheviks in Russia after the Second World War, which they really did, and they hate Russia because of it, proves that they can be beaten. So this should give us some hope that there's a way to win this battle if we're willing to think out the box and willing to continue the work we're doing.
Indeed. We've got to keep flying through these super chats, David, so I'm going to have to limit your time on each question. But Roy Danton gave $25. He says, looks like we might be setting an all-time record high in terms of chat on entropy. Yes, we are. Thank you very much for the generous donation. And Roy Danton also donated another $100. Thank you very much for such a generous...
Are they showing your actual numbers now? Or are they hiding?
Yeah, yes. I am mostly afraid, he says, this is for you, David. He says, I am mostly afraid of my mum because she's already quite old and also has some pre-existing health conditions. Can you give him some quick advice on how to keep her safe and what you would do to keep an elderly or vulnerable person safe in these trying times?
Well, for a short period of time, you should try to socially distance her. And that's hard. And if we had the herd immunity going on, if we had the everybody being able to go to cafes and going to movies and going to sport events, right, and going to plays and going to church and all the rest of it, the herd immunity among healthy people would have happened within a matter of weeks. And then you'd be free to have your elderly, vulnerable people. I want to save the lives of these people. And this shows you the insanity and the horror and the evil of the people who run our society, because they know that the overwhelming majority, I mean, really over 95% by all studies that have been done, 95%, 98%, 99%, like in Italy, are old, vulnerable people. So if they were really concerned about lowering the death toll and protecting the vulnerable, they would have focused on protecting the vulnerable, making sure that the nursing homes didn't have any spread of the virus there, making sure the people who worked there were tested, the nurses were tested, the people who were visiting for a while were socially isolated for a while, maybe letting the people visit their families behind the glass, right? Whatever. That's what would have saved more lives. And if you think about it, if 98% of the lives were done by people's social area and the median age was 80, if we had protected those vulnerable groups, the death toll would have been reduced by 95%. Think about that. So the horror of this whole epidemic wouldn't even exist because they're the ones who were dying in great numbers. So it would be less than the typical flu deaths per season if we would have simply focused on protecting the elderly. No wonder they've got to block me now, because I'm actually saying something and advocating something which would save a lot of lives and save them more lives than any of the so-called lockdown.
I agree. Thank you for great advice. And Roy, thank you so much for the generous donations. And I hope your mum stays well and you make it through it. You've always been a great supporter of this show. We love you very much. You're part of this community. Stay safe, my friend. Stephen Ben Bob gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, first time I've really heard Dr. David Duke speak at length. He seems to be a very humble and honest man. Indeed, he is. Sid on the net said, gave £5. Thank you very much. And he simply said, keep up the great work. Well, thank you very much. Send some Kamenum gave £10. Thank you very much. And he said, I would like to ask Dr. David Duke what he thinks that the global response should be towards the Chinese administration once COVID-19 has passed and to impress on them not to let it happen again. What do you think any sort of response to China should be?
Well, I think the first response to China would be to put America first, obviously. But I think we've got to understand this, and this is probably the one of the most important points that we're going to make here today. I believe that the enemy, the Zionist global, right, New World Order, if you would, or the Zionist global establishment, right, wants us to blame China in a sense. The truth is the Chinese would not be taking our jobs with the coolie labor over there, the cheap labor, except for the fact that the Zionist bankers have made trillions of dollars out of this arrangement, right? So, you know, every country is going to try to get trade positions that's advantageous to us, and the Chinese are working for their own interests as a people. We don't have governments in our society, in the media, that are working for our interests. It's the Zio global elite that they're working for at our cost. In fact, they're actively trying to destroy the people of our own countries who built the countries. While at the same time, they support their country, which was taken by ethnic cleansing and other population in the last 50 years. I mean, the hypocrisy is unbelievable, right? So this is the thing. If there's a problem with China, with trade or with any of these issues or with the virus or whatever, the people got to be blamed ultimately are not the Chinese, but the people who let the Chinese take so much of our economy and destroy our work. Our jobs, our labor, our factories, our economies, that's who should be blamed. And that's what we've got to control. We got to control those people who are ruling over us that have not only allowed this to happen, that have orchestrated this to happen.
Thank you. Now we've got an interesting super chat here, and I want to answer this myself. It's from Damien. He gave £5. Thank you very much. And he said, if you want to build communities and make steady progress for patriotic alternative, why bang on about COVID figures being made up and allow people like David Duke on your show? What's right for America isn't necessarily right for the UK. Heartfelt plea for normality. Well, Damien, I want to say this. We talk about the figures being exaggerated because they are. And at the heart of our movement is the idea of truth. Truth, fairness, and a genuine equality where we're not second-class citizens. And I say equality, and you're probably thinking, why have you tacked that on? Is this just a speech? Are you saying that to sound good? No, I'm saying it because it's important. Because these inflated mortality rates are being used to justify the most draconian lockdown in the UK's history. And what's more, whilst we're trapped in our homes, whilst we're being pushed around by the Stasi police, whilst our neighbours are being told to inform on us if we're seen going out too many times a day, 15,000 migrants per day flood into the UK without health checks, without screening, without restrictions. And if you're going to damn me for telling the truth about this, if you're going to damn me for saying what's in the Daily Mail, because the Daily Mail admitted that the government believes 6.6 million or in excess of 6.6 million have had the disease now. Iceland have admitted that 50% of all people who have the disease don't even know they've got it. The mortality rates are being exaggerated through a lack of testing. The disease is made out to be worse than it is as a smokescreen to fool the people into accepting their rights being taken away. And I'm always
over us.
Yes. Wait a second. And I want to address the second point about Dr. Duke. People might be misinformed about Dr. David Duke, but I don't think a single person could have come to this stream tonight and found him to be objectionable, rude, or like anything the media has ever painted him.
Or even wacky.
Or wacky. And in fact, before this stream was censored, it had a 97% like rating. Okay. Now, I see a lot of this concern trolling. I see a lot of this, PA will never get anywhere. PA will never get anywhere because you're too hardcore and you speak the truth too much and you associate with this person or associate with that person. Well, here's news. We're not running PA to please the media. We're not running PA to please the Tommy Robinson Zio clown show. We're running this as a community for us. And if you want to be on board with the truth seekers, if you want to be on board with people like myself, Jason and David Duke, this is the party for you. If you want to be on board with people who stab their friends in the back and cuck on them and disavow them the first time the media squawks, if you want to dance to your enemy's tunes, there's plenty of parties out there for you, mate. But this isn't it. And I am not cooking for anyone. And believe me when I say this, all those parties that have cooked, all those parties that have gone down the let's please the media with our optics route, where are they today? Nowhere, because they cooked themselves into non-existence. I've been around for 20 years. David's been in this fight for over 40 years, 50. And we're still here today. And the things we were saying decades ago have all been proved true. And I'm going to carry on doing it this way. And that, if people don't like it, I apologize that you don't like it. But I believe in my heart that not cooking, telling the truth, and trying to free people from these horrific draconian bonds in this police state is damn important. And we are moving on. Toys for Thoughts gave $5 and says, stay the course. We are winning. Indeed, we are. Novi Honza gave $10 and says, Dr. Duke, I met you at Euro 2008 and bought some of your art. This donation is in support of you, Mark and Jason, three true heroes. Also, it's defiance of the atrocious censorship by the anti-whites. Thank you very much. Celtic Advocate gave £3. If you had to remove one mainland US state for political demographic reasons, apart from California, what would it be and why? Jason and David, which mainland US state would you remove?
Manhattan. That's like a state.
I don't even know what state I would remove.
Oh, New York.
That's a difficult question.
Not, but upstate New York has a lot of good people in it. But New York City, my God, what a cesspool. That's But let me give you a quick, you had that last person too, and you answered it good. But I wanted very well. And I wanted to play, I got a little amazing little 45-second little tape of Bill Maher. Now, Bill Maher is a big, I know you get HBO over in Britain. He does the Bill Maher show, goes all over the world. He's a big Zionist. He's a big, very proud of his Jewish heritage and Israel and all that defender, right? So I want to show how evil these people are coming out of their own mouth. Here you go. Listen to this.
This economy is going pretty well.
That's Bill Maher.
What? Why is that funny?
It is going well for now.
For now, right. Thank you. That's my question. Is like, I feel like the bottom has to fall out at some point. And by the way, I'm hoping for it because I think one way you get rid of Trump is a crashing economy. So please bring on the recession. Sorry if that hurts people, but it's either root for a recession or you lose your democracy.
You know, one thing Bill Maher does well is to say what a lot of liberals are thinking, but won't say.
Bill Maher was basically pointing out that the economy determines presidential elections. It might not determine a midterm election. It sure didn't for Obama. The economy had turned by the time midterms came, but it does determine presidential elections.
The last guy was Chris Hahn, who is another Zionist, who's talking about how the economy determines elections. Now, here's a guy, famous, millionaire, big show, right? But he had me on one time, and he also had me hijacked by these faggots on the show trying to attack me. It was amazing. But anyway, this guy gets on there and says, he's thinking out loud, and he says, I hope there is a recession. And yeah, I know it's going to hurt a lot of people, but if that's the only way to get rid of Trump, we got to do it, right? So what kind of a creature would want millions of people to lose their jobs and lose their homes and suffer, and the suicide that comes from that, and the damage to their families that come from that? What kind of creature would do that? And anybody who thinks that It's just Bill Maher that says that. You see the hatred of the media, you know, against Trump. So this tells the story, doesn't it? These are the people we're dealing with. And if they exaggerated this virus to advance their robbery of us, like the Goldman Sachs, which has made trillions out of this, and JP Morgan and the Zionist corporations have more control over the world, I think they'd certainly do it. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just kind of like reality. And they're certainly willing to do it. Look at their morality here, our immorality here.
Well, look, we've got a lot of super chats and questions, so we're going to have a quick fire round because there's 20 minutes left. Well, David Marcus gave $50. Thank you very much. Mark, are you going to homeschool your daughter? That is very much up to my partner, not me, because she would be doing it. I would very much like her to. We both have concerns about the school system. It's just a matter of whether she would be able to do that. Thank you for the super chat. Supernova 808 gave £3. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, my friend. Junta Mominari. Quick question for you, David. We've got to keep this condensed. Dr. Okay. Duke, have you ever met Makoto Sakurai from Japan? He was at one of the conferences with the American Freedom Party. He has great information on the Zionist infiltration of Japanese academia and involvement in Japanese Antifa. Have you met him?
I may have, it was a long time ago, but I may have. I can't say for certain. I've met, you know, when I was campaigning for governor and senator, I've met hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. And it's kind of hard to keep them all straight after so many years.
Yeah, but thank you very much.
For certain, but I think so.
Okay, thank you very much. Phil Barker gave $10. He said, it seems material progress itself always erodes away at a nation's commitment to tradition and history. Might doesn't make right, but it does make the results. Can a nation achieve lasting sovereignty without engaging in spiraling imperialism and endless change? I think it can. I don't think you have to engage in imperialism. I think imperialism and endless change leads to the decline of your nation. Do you have a quick answer to that, David?
I think it can. I think that imperialism tends to devolve into a multiculturalism anyway, which erodes the true glue, the true binding factor of a country, its heritage, its culture, its genealogy, all of it. So absolutely. And I also believe, and let me tell you something, I am not against the idea of European alliances and things of that nature. That was an idea that was presented by Europe before the middle of the 20th century. But we also have to keep the sovereignty of the individual nations. But we should have really a sense that we're all brothers in this thing, even though we have different countries. And we should definitely do everything, whatever we have to do, to make sure there's no more wars between us. We cannot afford any more this fratricidal, terrible wars and destruction that the Zionists have been able to promote for our people for so long.
Thank you. And we have some final super chats. 156 viewer gave £5. Thank you very much. He said, hi, good show tonight. Thank you very much. Chuck Ford gave $50. Thank you very much for the generous donation. Great stream, everyone. Thanks, Dr. Duke. And Roy Danton gave another $25. Thank you for your generosity. He said, this was clearly one of the best PWR shows ever. I'm already looking forward to the 100th episode. But we do have questions, and this is still the quick fire round. Okay. So David is being very quick tonight. I've never seen him so speedy. Connor Chickmeister said, what are your thoughts on the protests against the lockdown in parts of the US? And could we see the same here in the UK? I think we could see the same in the UK. But David, what are your thoughts on these protests?
I think it's great. In fact, they had one fantastic professor in New York, a former member of the Rockefeller Institute, one of the top epidemiologists and modelers of viruses over the years. And he said, it's time for resistance. He said, these policies are killing people. And I really do believe that. And we should be focusing on helping the vulnerable, and we should get a herd immunity. And everything that goes along with that thing when I was telling you about earlier, the 2017, 28, 80,000 dead in America, all that proves that this entire process this year has been totally insane and counterproductive. Trump said it well, the cure in this case is worse than the disease. The cure is not a cure. The cure is destroying the Western world and causing enormous suffering. This response to this virus is nothing less than a massive crime against European humanity. And it is European countries, by the way, which have the greatest and most prominent lockdowns, right? And this is a crime against European humanity, as well as any place else in the world that's engaging it.
Indeed. Now, that was excellent, excellent, speedy answer. I'm going to ask you another question, but unfortunately, I've actually deleted a question there by error, and it was one of the highest rated questions, and it was actually a really great, great question for Dr. Duke. If anyone asked that question, the guy who asked that question, I'll look out for it. If you can ask it again, I will bump it up the chat.
Do you remember what it was, basically?
It was, I think it was about your past and that you are a very, very good advocate for the movement. But the question is, why does the establishment hate you so much? That was the gist of the question.
I think the question is, that's one of our friends in Europe. Let me get rid of that.
But it was a fantastic question. And as I said,
that's a good question. And I think the question itself answers the question. The reason that they demonize me so much is because I am effective. Because my books have 1,000 footnotes. They're reasonable. They're honest. They're heartfelt. There's no hatred in them. There's a lot of fairness and human rights in it. It is a message you can tell your family, your friends, your teachers at school. And if people actually hear the words, right, nobody's really going to really object to it because this is a true rendition of these words. So I think that's why and I believe this. It doesn't matter what your past is. Anybody that dared to expose the real racism that exists in this world, run by the national media, the anti-white racism, the pro-Zionist ultra-racist supremacism, anybody who exposes that is going to be demonized by the media. And the person who do it the most effectively is going to be the most hated. And I am proud of the fact that the Jewish Republican Coalition says that no other candidate for president in the history of the Republic of the United States of America was hated as much as Donald Trump, with the exception of presidential candidate David Duke. That is a great accolade. I'm so proud of that denotion.
Well, I'm proud to have you here tonight. I'm proud to have someone who is so hated by our enemies. Because I can say this, and I just want to back, I don't think Dr. Duke needs backing up on anything, but I want to back him up on this. And I just want to say that isn't it a badge of honor to be hated so much by our enemies? And I'll also say this. We are censored in so many ways. We have so many of our publications, so many of our streams, so many of our videos, so many of our books disappear down the memory hole. And it's really upsetting to me when people say we shouldn't endorse these things that the state has censored because it might scare away the normies. Dr. Duke's books are an absolute wealth of incredible knowledge. They're fonts of knowledge. But David isn't part of the grift right. He's not asking for your money. He is actually placing his greatest work, which is My Awakening, up on the internet as an audiobook for free. I'm going to post the link to that incredible work on my Telegram straight after the show. This is a man who has not only fought the system his entire life, he's not only been demonized for telling the truth and being proved right again and again and again, but his masterpiece, his greatest literary work, once a bestseller, is now available, read to you by him for free. This is a man that you can genuinely put your trust in. Nitler asked, Mark, any idea when the manifesto is dropping? It'll be dropping, my friend, when we are good and ready. Duke Crowborough asked, hi, Mark, what is your opinion of Marine Le Pen? I think she does some good work, but I don't think she would agree with me on everything. And I'm sure I wouldn't agree with her on everything, but she is certainly a step in the right direction. Never Be Blackpilled asked, is Kevin MacDonald ever coming back on the show? That would top this off nicely. No, but next week we do have, well, he will be back on the show eventually, but we have the Iconoclast on next week. Maynard Frith asked a question for David, and he said, David, please further discuss public mockery of our enemies and its effect on red-pilling our people. Many people need to hear this.
I think humor is a great thing to do, and But again, make it humor that's within the bounds of, so to speak, good taste, you know, because if they think you're doing this hatefully or viciously, you know, make fun of it in a lighthearted way, you know. So it's the old saying, there was a Jewish psychologist by the name of Shakatan. And he was the most successful psychologist against the National Socialists, by the way, in France and Belgium before the Second World War. And he used to say, what you do is you make fun, you know, you make fun of the enemy. And one thing you can do, for instance, is you just be clever about it. And he used to say that, for instance, I'll give you an example. If you call, even if the guy was an obvious, homosexual or, you know, crazy person, you don't say, well, okay, you're a homosexual. No, you say, oh, I'm not saying you're a homosexual. I would never say that you're a homosexual. And the only thing, of course, people remember is that. So be smart, be clever, and be funny. And that's the way to do it. And try to be more clever and more intelligent in the way you do things. But yes, we should mock our enemies and make fun of them, our enemies. No question. Laugh off the attacks they make against me.
This is another good question. And he.
I got to say one more thing. The Stoics said it right. Epictetus and Marc Aurelius said this, that if somebody says, oh, but you're such a terrible thing, you did blah, 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 blah. You say, no. Why didn't you mention all the things I really did bad? You know, what's the matter with you? Right. So that's how you do it. You just say so. And so what else you got? You know, I know it's what's the issues. That's how you do it. Just laugh it off. Go forward on the positions that you need to do. I love the Stoic philosophers, by the way.
Now, somebody asks, Matt V asks, how would David reflect on his days with the Triple K? And if he could, how would he change them?
Well, you know, you learn by doing, and I'm not ashamed of anything I did. I was never violent or illegal or hateful. And it was an organization. It's a American born and bred organization. It was defending the rights and heritage of our people. The Klan was not actually an illegal, violent group. There were some individuals who called themselves glad that because people couldn't control it, who did some things. That's why I left the organization, because I realized there was no way that I could bring forth the ideas of this organization as long as there were people who I didn't have any power over, who had their own organizations that would totally destroy our image or what we stood for to the public. I can't say there that we're for treating people decently and so forth. And while somebody else comes up there and says, guns are for killing people. What do you think they're for? You know, this kind of thing. So I was not going to be associated with that. And I realized that that wasn't the best vehicle. So over time, you know, if I look back on it, I'm not ashamed of what I did. I'm proud of the fact that I stood up in a traditional American organization. But at the same time, I realized that that probably wasn't the best vehicle to express our opinions. Nothing I can do about it now, but I sure didn't let that stop me. I got elected to office years after that. So there you go.
You certainly did. And that's probably one of the most remarkable parts of your story, that against all the odds, you never stopped fighting, but you also never stopped winning, and you never stopped bringing hope to our people. Now, we have one last very, very important question for you tonight, David. It comes from White Leg Slayer, and he asks possibly the most important question of our time. What are your thoughts on cream eggs?
I don't know what in the hell cream eggs are.
I'm sorry. That is a crazy question.
If I knew what they were, maybe I could make a comment on it.
It's a joke aimed at me. We have these things in
the UK. I know a few people that, you know, they should be creamed by some eggs. No problem.
No. They're chocolate eggs filled with fondant icing.
Bad idea.
They are.
Well, I tell you one thing. I'm an enemy of sweets.
You couldn't be an enemy of cream eggs. They're just too delicious.
I believe in, you know, good protein. I want to have a good piece of lamb or a good piece of beef, right? I want to eat a whole fish on the Barbie. That's what I want to eat. I'm basically a carnivore. And I try to live my life, you know, with basic stuff. You know, I really, you know, I got it. If you looked around my house here, you'd think you were in like a Spartan camp or something. You know, it's there's no luxury couches. There's a bench right there because we're working out with the lockdown. I got a bench with some weights. I've got an exercise bicycle. I've got some dumbbells, right? And you don't see any nice couches around. I got a piano over there, but I haven't played that for years. Once I got elected to office, that was over. But I really like the idea, in fact, that we don't need much to live. In fact, I try to live my life, like the Stoics say, you live your life like, how would you live this day if it was the last day of your life?
With a lot of cream eggs, that's what I say.
Well, if you need that, if that's your dream. But my dream is a little more than cream eggs. My dream is the salvation of our people. My dream is the preservation of our people. My dream is our people ultimately not only winning their freedom, but going across the universe. My dream is to have really healthy children in a healthy society where we protect the environment in which we live. We respect the natural world. We believe in physical fitness, moral fitness, the highest ideals. Those are my dreams. And, you know, and that gives me purpose. And in your life, the only way you can ultimately, I will tell this to the young people out there listening, the only way you can really be happy is if you do something that you yourself in your own heart and spirit find virtuous. If you live a lie, if you're doing things that you're ashamed of, some sort of addiction or some sort of a weakness, every day you have to examine your life. The Stoics would say, you know, a unexamined life is not worth living. And every day before you go to bed, you have to kind of do the tally. Did I live in a virtuous way today? Did I apply myself? Did I make something happen? Did I live according to my purpose? And the Stoics used to say that every form of, you know, the bees are busy doing their work and the ants are doing their work and the lions and tigers are doing what their purpose is, their job. And every human being, I think, and every European person has to understand if they're doing your purpose. And the purpose that every European now should focus on is not whatever individual dreams they had of being a doctor or being an astronaut or, you know, becoming rich, unless that is a way to advance our cause, because we should all be focused with a purpose of preserving our people, our very existence, and making sure that our children and grandchildren and our society moves to a point where we can fulfill our destiny. And I believe that destiny is not only to free the planet, it's also to free and to go across, actually, the universe and to find our destiny out there. We're in an eternal search for God, in a sense. And I believe there is a purpose to the universe. I believe there's a purpose to life. I believe there's a purpose behind evolution. And I'm trying to live my life in service of that purpose. And when I live my life on a day-to-day basis, and when I'm spending that time, the only thing that we really have is the now, this present. You can't live in the future. You can't live in the past. But you can control the instant of life and the instant of time that you now have in your hands. And right now I'm spending it with you, Mark, and with thousands of other people that are listening that will hear this video, and I'm fulfilling my purpose. That's how you live a life, and that's how you really get the happiness. People always ask me to close the show, I guess, you know, you made a lot of sacrifices, and was it worth it? I don't view my life as a sacrifice. I've gone to prison. I've gone to the gulag because they wanted to silence me and shut me down and intimidate me. I've suffered many disappointments in my life and many mistreatments by the powerful forces. But I don't look at it like a sacrifice. I look at my battle and the fact that I've got a few scars on the body of this warrior. I look at that as an honor. I look at that as a privilege. I look at this life that I've had, as hard as it's been, as a true warrior, and that I know that the fact that I've engaged in battle, that I've fought hard and true. And by the way, it's not necessarily the winner, the guy that wins the contest, who's necessarily the most moral person. You can be just as moral if you give your all in any contest, whether it be physical, spiritual, political, whatever. And that's how you judge. You should judge yourself, and that's how you should judge others. And that's how really all of us can have a true happy life. I believe I could be happy in almost any situation because I'm going to be true to myself and true to the things I believe and true to my people and true to the purpose of life on this planet and life in the universe. And that's about it.
Well, thank you. And thank you for closing the show with such powerful words. We have a couple of final messages. The first is from Roy Danton, who gave $50. And he said, shout out to the amazing Entropy developers. Your software worked absolutely amazingly well tonight. Thank you, Roy. You've been so generous. That is very, very much appreciated. If there's ever anything I can do for you, please don't hesitate to write to me. We have one last shout out. It's from one of our oldest and most loved viewers, Red Pill Bulgaria, who said, not a question, just a comment. Dr. Duke is an inspiration for all of us. He's physically stronger, intellectually sharper, more articulate and eloquent than 90% of young people, a true role model. That's a perfect statement to end the show. And that's where we are closing things down, guys. Jason, give us your quick outro. David's already done his. Hit us with the
thanks for being with me too, Jason. I really appreciate you and your thoughts.
Oh, thank you, Dr. David Duke, and thank you for being here with us. Tap this week, Friday or Saturday. We'll find out from Mark when he can make it, but we'll have that great Mark Collette on. Big thank you to Entropy for coming through in the clutch. And I do have a state to get rid of in the United States, and that's the state of apathy. Let's make a change, folks, and I pass it back.
Well, thank you. Tonight's been an insane ride. I've never seen a stream go into a limited state before during the stream. This has been insane, the censorship. But the way this community's pulled together has been incredible. Thank you. Thank you so much to everyone who's lasted the distance. If we are still here next week, it will be with the Iconoclast. If we're not, you'll find me somewhere else. You will find this video disappearing, and it will be going straight to BitChute. So please share the replay because there's so much wisdom in tonight's show. But thank you to everyone who stuck with us. Thank you to everybody who donated so generously. It is so touching to see people coming through with such heartfelt and generous gifts at a time where I don't know whether I'm going to lose my YouTube channel. I don't know whether I will be here in the morning. But one thing is, whatever happens, it's been an amazing ride. It's been an amazing show. We've built an amazing community, and we haven't ever cucked once. Tonight's show hasn't really been controversial. It hasn't been full of controversial statements. It's been full of statements to fire you up, to make you realize that we're motivated by love, and also to make you realize the most important thing, that we are still fighting, we will always be fighting, and we will never, ever stop fighting until we have achieved victory. Thank you, David. Thank you, Jason. Thank you to this wonderful community. I love you all. Stay safe. Have a great night, and I will hope to see you again same time next week. Look after yourselves and stay safe.